This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
From the MLB Network, The Athletic, and Stadium, he is Jason Stark with us weekly on McNeil and Parkins on The Score. How's it going, Jason?
It's going good, Danny. How are you doing, man?
We're doing very well, thank you. You did a lot of reporting earlier in the season about where baseball is on, you know, improving the game and modernizing the game, speeding it up, instant replay, all sorts of things like that. Jeff Passan was on with us earlier this week, and he threw something in at the end of the conversation that I had not heard about, which was a thought that once we got to a point where the strike zone could be automated, you know, the equivalent robot umpires, a strike zone that changed based on the count. And it started out small to incentivize a batter swinging at the first pitch, and then it grew a little bit from strike one to strike two, and then strike two to strike three, thinking that it would put the priority back on starters over relievers because they'd go longer into the game, the ball would be put in play more, there'd be more action, and the strike zone would be automated. Have you heard anything like that proposed?
I've heard thinking aloud about this. I've heard it kicked around. I don't think there's any appetite for making it happen at this point. And I don't know how you'd write that rule that would make it legal. I was in the group to talk to Rob Manfred about the automated strike zone over the All-Star break, and he just didn't seem that interested. There are people in the game who are really interested, but he's not one of them. He talked about his fears that if you have an automated strike zone and the umpire behind home plate isn't really calling pitches, then does that umpire lose his ability to control the game in other ways? And he feels like that control is important. So we have got a long way to go before we get to something that futuristic. But I understand the concept, and there are definitely people who are interested in it.
How long before robot umpires? Forget the expanding strike zone with the count. I mean, at the earliest, what would you suspect?
I think technologically, we're really close.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what's going to be the obstacle at this point. It's convincing the human beings. And I just don't get the sense in the sport right now that anybody agrees on anything.
So
when the next labor deal is 2021. You definitely won't see it before then.
When you said there are definitely people in the game that are interested, are those managers, players, executives? Who are those people?
There are players, hitters primarily. There are executives. There are people in the commissioner's office who are really intrigued by it. But there are a lot of ripple effects to it that people probably haven't considered. You know, the ability of the umpire to control the game is one. I was talking to a guy about this in maybe the last couple of weeks, and he said, think about all the time we spend right now trying to find catchers who can frame. He said, if we went to the automated strike zone, that entire topic goes away.
Hmm.
That entire skill set becomes irrelevant unless somebody can figure out some way to fool the robot umpire. And this
Hackers,
is the kind of thing
Russia.
That they have not fully explored yet. What are all the consequences of what seems to be a simple change?
You know, we've been watching replay now for several years, and Jason, we hit a stretch. I think it started Friday afternoon. Danny and I were at the ballpark for the Cubs-Padres, and there were a couple games that followed over the weekend where there just seemed to be a ton of replays and many reversals, most of them reversed. And I walked away from that series thinking, Replay's working. Do you feel that instant replay is working or not?
I do. It's not perfect, but I've always been a replay fan. I'm sure you guys know that. And the reason is, if you have technology, why would you not use it? Like, why would you feel it's acceptable when the wrong team wins? Right? Like, most of the time now, thanks to replay, the right team wins. You don't have teams that win a game because an umpire just blatantly missed a call. I mean, that part of the game has largely gone away. Now, I would love to see the system streamlined. I would love to have managers decide instantaneously instead of, you know, putting the hand up, waiting for the video crew to look at it. That's dead time I would love to see eliminated. But other than that, the system basically has done what it's designed to do, and that is take the horrendous, obvious missed call and fix it.
Jason Stark from The Athletic and MLB Network is our guest. I'll take a drastic right turn here. I read a piece today about Justin Verlander and 200 wins and how 200 wins is the new 300 wins. Off of that, I had the following thought. Do you think John Lester will be a Hall of Famer?
That's a really interesting question. I would say right now he's probably on the not quite list. And when I say that, I just want to remind everybody that to say that you're not quite a Hall of Famer is not an insult. It's a compliment. It means you're one of the greatest players who ever played baseball. But in Lester's case, I mean, he's got the postseason resume with two different teams. He's got a no-hitter. He's had a number of consistently good seasons. How many dominating seasons for John Lester? I think that's his problem. You know, he's not a strikeout per inning guy in an age of strikeouts. He's not a I'm going to go out and shut you out every night kind of guy. Give him the ball, get out of the way. He's not quite that. He's just one of those incredibly valuable people and pitchers in the sport who you can start the season knowing pretty much what he is and what you're going to get. There's tremendous value in that. I'm just not sure it makes him a Hall of Famer. What do you guys think?
I don't know. It's a great conversation for down the road. I'm a little bit more. My gray matter is going to what John Lester is going to do the remaining 6 weeks of this baseball season, because he's not been the same guy he was the first 3 months of it.
No. I don't blame you. And, you know, I would say that the perception of the Cubs in general is, do they have enough starting pitching to make it through 4 weeks of October against the best teams in the sport? I know there's questions about the consistency of the offense and who's going to be the closer and a lot of stuff. And I have great confidence in their ability to make big plays and handle the moment. But do they have enough pitching? And in order for us to answer that question, yeah, sure, John Lester has to be really good, and he hasn't been lately. I mean, he's been remarkably good considering as you've watched him. It doesn't feel like he has the same bullets in the arsenal that he used to have, and he's so smart and resourceful, he has found a way, but not lately. And when a guy hits 33, 34 years old, I think that's a concern.
Yeah, the peripherals on Lester are not good. The last five or six starts are not good. And the last time out, it was warm and the wind was blowing out. And you could just tell from the first batter of the game, it's like, oh, God, this is not the guy you want out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I take some solace is the 148 career postseason innings with a 2.55 postseason ERA. And you get him in 50-degree weather with the wind blowing in October with his mental approach to the game. It's like, all right, in that spot, do I hate giving the ball to Lester? No. In August at Wrigley with the wind blowing out, do I hate giving the ball to Lester? Hell yes, I do.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I also think, you know, there's a value in him being around Cole Hamels. You know, they've often been compared. There's a guy who has emailed me for, I don't know, at least a decade. And he does this thing called baseball twins. He picks out players who he is constantly comparing as baseball twins. And for this entire stretch, for over a decade, he's had Cole Hamels and John Lester as twins. And now here they are on the same staff. Wouldn't it be funny if one of the reasons that the Cubs felt so good about getting Hamels was there was John Lester to help him, and maybe it'll turn out to be the other way around?
Yeah, no kidding. And you'd probably, in terms of your useless information, four lefty starters in a rotation, right? Quintana, Montgomery, Lester, Hamels, and then Kyle Hendricks, who's a righty who throws like a lefty?
I know. So much of October comes down to matchups. And for the Cubs, I think that's going to be especially true.
Do you like, in terms of what? Who would they match up well with or badly?
Yeah, I would rather have more balance. But, hey, if they were to match up with a team that was loaded with left-handed bats, and, you know, right now in the National League, the range of possibilities is so great. It's hard to say who they match up best with. But I don't think you'd want a team predominantly right-handed on the other end. I think the Braves come to mind as a team that whose best hitters tend to be left-handed, who you would much rather see the Cubs play them. But we're a long ways from that right now.
Jason Stark, every Thursday with us on McNeil and Parkins on Sports Radio 670 The Score. If Brandon Morrow is not a part of the stretch run, should Cubs fans feel secure with Pedro Strop waiting to get the last three outs?
I think he asked me a variation of this question last week, Dan. And, Pedro Strop's done well. I can remember going to see the Rangers his rookie year, and Mike Maddox was the pitching coach. And I said, if there was a word to describe where Pedro Strop is going in his career, what would that be? And he said to me, closer. Now, I don't know that we've seen enough of that to agree, right, up till now. But he's held the fort. He's been fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you would look at Pedro Strop and when he walks into the game and it's game six of the World Series, you're thinking, when do we start the parade?
No.
But, right now, considering the options, it's working out well. I'd feel a lot better Brandon Morrow if you knew he was going to come back and be himself. I just look at this today. He's given up three extra base hits the whole season. I want that guy pitching in October.
Yeah, Morrow's been fantastic, obviously, even with this Cubs and the Cubs season and the injuries and all that. He's been fantastic when he's been out there. There's been some Yoan Moncada conversation around town recently. It's only 636 career at-bats, but he's leading the league in strikeouts. And a lot of them, it's like he's got such a good eye, Jason, but a lot of those strikeouts are looking. Do you downgrade him in terms of his ceiling based on this year, or is this a normal struggle in terms of understanding a major league strike zone in the first 600 at-bats of a career?
I don't know that any of those words exactly apply, but he's obviously an intriguing talent. And he's obviously a guy who goes up there with a plan. And the problem is right now, big league pitchers are exploiting that plan. You know, if you're going to hit with two strikes as much as he does, then you have to have a better understanding of everything that entails. He's in these deep counts, at bat after at bat after at bat, and it's great to take pitches, but you have to be taking pitches for a purpose. And right now, I don't get that sense when I watch him consistently. I don't think he knows exactly what the purpose is, what the end game is, what that pitch is that he's looking for, that he's going to drive. I mean, the reason to take pitches is that you haven't gotten that pitch that you're looking for, right? That pitch that's in your game plan to drive that time at the plate. When you watch him, do you get a, I mean, do you feel like you're watching a guy who knows exactly what he's up there to do?
No. I don't.
No.
I don't. And you know what? In the frying pan is hotter because the guy they traded for is leading a team potentially to 113 victories. Chris Sale's second in baseball in earned run average and number one in whip. That makes it that much more painful, just like Cubs fans earlier in the year looking at Arrieta's stats while watching Hugh Darvish cry.
I'm sorry. This is what this trade was always going to be. I mean,
sure, Sale now and hopefully Moncada later.
Yeah, you knew that Chris Sale was going to be great in Boston,
uh-huh.
Right? There's no doubt about that. The question was, what were Moncada and Kopech going to be?
Yeah.
And that was going to be a long waiting game to find that out. We're not there yet.
The thing that's interesting to me about what Moncada's going through is, you know, I hear all the time the conversation about, like, can you learn plate discipline? And a lot of people say no. Like, we talk about it with Albert Almora all the time, or Javi Baez and his MVP conversation with his OBP being low. It's like, well, if Moncada has the plate discipline but is almost too disciplined, that strikes me as something that can be improved upon and can be taught and learned.
I agree. I think it could be as simple as the right voice in his ear, who makes the light bulb go on. You've got to be aggressive in certain situations, in certain counts, in certain pitches, certain locations, and that's the part of the journey he has not completed. There's a difference between plate discipline and pitch recognition. He's got the plate discipline part. I don't think he's got the pitch recognition part yet. But I agree with you. I think a guy with this eye can find that. But that doesn't mean it's going to be an easy path to get there. The path is what you're watching now. Fasten your seatbelts.
Yeah, 163 strikeouts on August 9th. Jason Stark from The Athletic and MLB Network. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.